Douglas E. Richards. Performed by Corey Gagne. Part 1. The Rod of God. Chapter 1. It was nearing 7 in the morning, and President Dillon Madison was still reeling, 3 hours after having been awakened from a sound sleep and hastily ushered deep into the earth. Years earlier, the President's Emergency Operations Center, built in the 1940s under the east wing of the White House to withstand a nuclear attack, had been replaced by the bunker he was now in. This one was below the west wing, and so fortified and deep that it made the other seem soft and shallow by comparison, as well as containing substantially upgraded communications and computer systems. What had been PEOC, the President's Emergency Operations Center, was now DUCC, the Deep Underground Command Center. During his mad dash to get here, swept along by a whitewater river of Secret Service agents, Madison had decided that the name DUCC couldn't be more appropriate, although it needed to be spelled a different way, D-U-C-K, not D-U-C-C, and spoken more emphatically, Duck, because that was what he was really doing here. He was ducking, and it was beginning to really irk him. Yes, there had been a horrendous mass casualty event that had taken the world by surprise, at least those who weren't still sleeping in blissful ignorance. But he needed to be out front on this, on television. He needed to be presenting a face of calm. He needed to reassure, to grieve, to publicly provide condolences on behalf of a traumatized nation to friends and families of those tragically lost. The last thing he needed was to be trapped in a glorified conference room as if he were in personal danger, sniveling like a child frightened of an act of nature that had happened thousands of miles away and that couldn't possibly be a threat to him. When the Secret Service had insisted that he remain where he was until they were dead certain this was a natural event and not an attack, he had agreed. But this had been in the beginning of the crisis, and by now they should be certain. He would give them 30 more minutes, out of respect, before he demanded to return to the surface. Lou Nevins, Madison's chief of staff, sat beside him at the ridiculously elongated conference table, listening to a report coming through the comm in his ear, his face looking bleaker by the second. "We have an update on casualties," he said to the gathering, which consisted of 5 flesh-and-blood humans on the President's National Security Council and numerous others desperately gathering intel and joining or leaving the proceedings as virtual attendees, popping in and out of the command center in 3D glory, nearly indistinguishable from the real thing. Everyone was juggling conversation and a frenzy of activities, but stopped in their tracks to listen to the chief of staff's update. "The original estimates were 3,000 dead," said Nevins, looking sick to his stomach. "But this has risen pretty dramatically. We are probably looking at closer to 5,000. The meeting participants all looked as though they had been punched in the gut. The president visibly cringed, and then shook his head in horror. 5,000! The biggest loss since 9/11. Even as he thought it, Madison's political instincts seized on the best possible spin to put on the situation. "Today at 3:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time," he would say during his address to the nation, "a terrible tragedy occurred." He would ignore the fact that the Secret Service had kept him in his underground prison for so long that his entire audience would already know this. "A meteor struck the city of Turlock, California," he would continue, "with devastating effect." He would go on to describe the terrible tragedy further, explain that its toll of lives was heavier even than on 9/11, and make it clear that no words could express his or the nation's sense of loss. "Although this is of little comfort right now," he would add, "we can take some solace from the fact that this was an act of nature and not one of terror." He wouldn't have to spell it out further. The casualties...